Okay, and we're going to take your phone calls this hour now with the morticians, Kenneth McKenzie, Todd Hera, Mortuary Confidential, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Todd, what do you think about ghosts? Do they exist?
Of course they do. Maybe not in the sense that most people have been exposed to by the popular media, but I certainly believe in spiritual presence. Moved out of a house about a year ago that was built, you know, over a century ago, and it was housing built for the working class that worked in the powder mills in Delaware. And back then, people were born in houses and they died in houses all the time. God only knows how many people died in that house. And there was certainly a spiritual presence in that house.
There's an energy here, isn't there?
There is. I agree.
Let's go to some of the phones. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. David, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, David.
Hi, George. Good program.
Hi.
Hi, Kenneth and Todd.
Hi.
My story is, when I was a young adult, about 20 years old, I needed a job, and I went to work one day for a large crematory, mortuary, cemetery in Southern California. And I worked on the crematory squad, and it was my job to go around to different smaller mortuaries in town and pick up bodies and bring them to the crematory for cremation. And I drove a plain white van and went around to the different places in town. And what I found was that when someone is going to be cremated, that they're usually not embalmed. And they put them in clear plastic body bags and put them into cardboard boxes that are shaped like coffins. At least that's the way it was back then in the early 80s. And so some of the, you know, interesting things that happened was usually they had them being refrigerated and it was pretty orderly, but sometimes they weren't. And it seemed like sometimes they hadn't called the crematory when they should have and they had been around too long. And one that I picked up, I had the box with the body in it on kind of a gurney like you would see EMTs hauling people around on. It's sort of an X-shaped gurney with wheels on it. And I put the end of the box on the back of the van, and I was trying to slide the box into the van, and I was on a sloped surface. And as I did that, the gurney kind of rolled out from under me, and the box buckled. And so I had one end of the box on the van and the other end of the box in my hands, and fluids ran out of the box down onto the street.
Oh.
And that was kind of the start of my very interesting day that day. What I found throughout the day is as I brought bodies to the crematory, that they were kind of stacking up around there. The guy that ran the crematory was sort of not doing his job real diligently. And so he was kind of getting behind and trying to get caught up at the end of the day. So what he was showing me was that he could be more efficient by, instead of after each burn, gathering up the ashes and putting them into an urn, he would just wait until the end of the day. And then gather up the ashes at the end of the day and put them into urns.
All in one pile, right?
All mixed up like that.
Oh, my God.
And also because he was kind of in a hurry, some of the larger chunks, like pieces of hip bones and skull and fragments like that, would go into the urn still in chunks. So I could imagine that, you know, somebody'd be out there on the ocean or up in the mountains somewhere and go to scatter Uncle Bill's ashes somewhere or something like that, and they'd get, you know, plop, 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 plop.
All right, Kenneth, let me ask you and Todd, who's the watchdog for funeral homes? If the various states, do they have agencies that do that?
Yeah, in California, it's the California State Board of Funeral Directors, and they do pop inspections all the time. They get into my instruments, make sure that everything's clean. They look at wording, the way that I advertise, that your license has to appear. And unfortunately, in any industry, I don't care if you're a mortician or a mechanic, it takes one or two people to just mess it up for everybody.
Oh,
And
absolutely.
unfortunately, in this field, you only hear about the times when people mess it up. You rarely hear about it on like shows like this when people are doing things properly and to help other people. It bothers me that somebody would do some of the things that the caller was calling in about. Do I think it goes on? It probably does. If I were working for someone or I saw that, the first thing that I would say is, well, why didn't we call the state board? Because that person does not belong in the industry.
Now, how many people on average die in a major city every day? Is it
Oh.
like 10, 20, 50? How many?
It's a percentage of the population. I think it's 1.5% of the population will die, in a given year. So it all depends on how populous your city or region is that you're servicing.
And all kinds of deaths, accidents, gunshot victims, heart attacks, cancer, you name it, they all come in.
We see
Exactly.
everything. I mean, it's unusual. We'll have, I don't know what it is in with for Todd, but it's like all at once. Either we'll have all older women, or we'll have all older men, or we'll have all young people, or we'll have all motorcycle accidents. It's like they seem to come in waves.
I was told by a fella who would be a cleaner. So they would call him, cops would call him after they did their crime scene investigation,
All
and
right.
it was his job, his company would go and clean up the mess. He said he got more calls during the period of the full moon. Did you two find that to be the same running your businesses? That during full moons, more people died or anything like that?
I think that makes sense because of the fact that when there's a full moon, people, hey, let's go out. People go out. There's accidents. I mean, it makes sense that that would happen. And I do feel a difference. There's certain days that people are just acting weird. And I've said to my staff, I go, is it a full moon or what? So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Let's go to Wilmington, Delaware, east of the Rockies. Robert, you're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
George, how you doing?
Okay, all is well.
Did I hear one of you gentlemen say you were from Delaware?
I am.
Where from?
To Wilmington.
Oh, okay. And I'm right outside of Wilmington from Ellesmere.
Okay.
Gentlemen, my question is, when my father had passed, his mouth was wide open. And, the few days that went by, we went to the viewing and all that. And when we got there, he had this natural smile. And I called the funeral director over and I said to her, did you do this? And she said, honey, we can do a lot of things, but whatever he saw put the smile on his face. So I was wondering if, was she joshing me or have you guys ever seen anything like that or.
I don't think she's joshing you. Honestly, it happens. When we pass away, we have an involuntary muscle that keeps our mouth open and closed during life. And when we pass away, the jaw opens. It's natural. When we close the jaw, and the funeral director would have to do that, that natural smile or that natural feature would appear on its own.
Same with the eyes. When you die, the eyes are open most of the time.
They're typically opened or closed, but they will retract open because the body goes through dehydration and they'll retract back. But there's a small cap that we use that just goes on, almost like a contact lens that holds the eye in place, the eyelid in place.
When does the body start getting hard rigor mortis? When does that set in?
Now, Todd is closer to schooling and he'll remember more, but rigor mortis is a temporary onset that only it comes on and then it goes away.
Oh, it goes away. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can. Todd, can you know more about that? I forgot.
It's dependent on a lot of factors. The temperature in the room or outside, the person's muscle mass. I think the rule of thumb is that rigor mortis usually sets in between 12 and 72 hours and usually passes within 24. But it's so variable, there's really no hard and fast rule.
That's what a lot of times they use the rigor mortis if it has come and gone, if they're out of rigor or in rigor. That means that they can determine if they find a person in their home that's passed away, if they're in rigor, they can kind of guesstimate the hour of death. If they're out of rigor again, they can go back. That's going to be longer than they thought.
When you see movies like Rambo, for example, and they come on the scene of a horrendous scene, all these bodies everywhere, they've been there a few days, and they're all covering their mouths. They can't breathe. Why does the body, the dying body, after a few days, why does it begin to have that odor so fast? What causes that?
It's a natural decomposition. It happens in everything that's living. We're designed to live, and then we slowly pass. And when we do pass away, there's a mechanism within our body. The best way to understand this, like a little Pac-Man that's released, and it just starts breaking down the body. It's a natural process. We go back to where we came from.
Why couldn't we smell like flowers, for example?
That'd be nice.
You know? There's a new invention right there. Let's go to Reno, Nevada. Mike, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
When my grandparents died, they died about 12 years apart. First, my grandmother died in about 69, and then about 1980 or so, my grandfather died. And we got home from the funeral home, and the funeral that day, we're sitting around the dining room table talking, and all of a sudden there's an earthquake. And my uncle says, gee, I didn't think they'd be fighting so soon. In California, they kind of bury them double-decker style, you know, right. 2-to-1 grave, and they had been divorced for years.
Oh.
I thought you'd enjoy that one.
I like. Thanks for That's that story. What do you think of, and I know this is your business, but are we going to eventually run out of space to put bodies?
Yeah, I mean, the earth is only so big. I mean, cremation will be required. Probably not in our lifetime, but it will be required. Where are we going to put everybody?
Exactly. Did either one of you see the movie Soylent Green?
I did not. No.
Mm-mm. Okay. All right. You got it. You'd both enjoy it as a movie starring the late Charlton Heston. I'm not going to give it away. Let's go to Dakota in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Dakota. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
My question is, I'm actually in the mortuary science field myself, and I'm 20, and I have to start my apprenticeship, and it's 3,000 hours. And I have gone on a couple of interviews, and a lot of the people are saying, oh, you're really young. You don't know if this is really what you want to do. And I just wanted to know, like, what is the best way to get your foot in the door? I know it's hard being a female also, the male-dominated field.
I believe that when I started, I was skinny. I was, almost 18 years old. I had braces. I wanted a job at a funeral home. They laughed at me, literally. So I'll come back in a few years. I said, well, can I just sweep your parking lot? And if I do a good job, you don't have to pay me. So I think it's just by being persistent and just doing something that most people don't do. Don't take no. If it's what you want to do, then you just keep pushing and you'll make it. And if you ask me, most women make very good funeral directors, because they can show empathy, and they have that nature about them to take care of people. So honestly, I would go to each funeral home and just say, well, can I work here for a week? You don't have to pay me, and if you like me at the end, you can hire me on, and if not, I'll go away.
Are there a lot of jobs in that field?
I see a lot of them here, yeah.
You do? Okay. And what are the general pay ranges for entry-level people?
It's not the best paying job. This is one I see a lot of people getting in as a second career because they always wanted to do it. But it's not one that you really
it's kind of like being a teacher.
Yeah, when you first start, you really pay the piper because you are picking bodies up in the middle of the night.
Worst hours, everything. Right?
Yeah.
But if you get into it because you like it.
You really are meant to do this, you'll get through it.
Yeah, it's a job that you pick because it's not like applying because you got to go to work. You really want to do it, right?
Exactly. Is Dakota still on the line?
No, she hung up.
Okay, well, if she's still listening, I just wanted to let her know that, you know, even though it is still predominantly male dominated, well over 60% of all mortuary school classes across the country are female. So we're seeing a kind of a paradigm shift in male to female domination of this field, you know, because women do make such good funeral directors.
Why do you guys always play that sad music? You know, what, throw in some rock music or something.
Actually, it's funny that you said that, because if you come to my place, it's more about Enya. It's like upbeat. It's more spiritual energy music. I agree with you. I don't like the death droll organ music.
I hate that.
There's something about that. I don't get it.
I mean, it sets the tone for being depressed the minute you walk in, doesn't it?
I know.
Next up, we go to first-time caller Sam in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, Sam, go ahead.
Hi, Todd and Kevin.
Hi.
I want to compliment you two young gentlemen. I'm retired, 44 years in the profession. Had a very unique experience with one of the funerals we had.
What happened?
A gentleman was telling me that he drove his wife everywhere. Took her to the doctor, the beauty shop. He said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I looked at him and I said, well, tomorrow morning, how about if you take her to the cemetery and you drive the hearse?
That's great.
Yeah, Sam, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, we have to be attuned to our family's needs. I mean, I've had horse-drawn carriages. I've had buckboards, fire trucks in my career. And you guys are there. And you're the next generation, and you two seem to be attuned to it. I just want to compliment you both on it.
Well, thank you very much, Sam.
Very good. And next up, we go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's Carrie's turn. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Big fan. First time I've called in here.
Thank you.
I just want to tell the guys, yeah, you should totally watch Soylent Green. I won't say the famous line.
Great movie. I love it.
Yeah, my question for the guys was, you know, we've been watching in our house a lot of, like, Six Feet Under and stuff lately. And what's the grossest thing you've ever, like, encountered when working in your business? Because I know they have, like, blood bubbling up through the piping and stuff. And I don't know if that's, like, real or what. So
you first,
Is the piping real, Todd?
No, it's like the blood boiling through the piping real.
I just want to comment on that, Carrie bringing Six Feet Under up. Even though it is kind of a Hollywood show, I love that show, that it brought this profession to the mainstream America, and it showed that we are, you know, human beings too. You know, I think that show's done more for this profession in the past, you know, 5-6 years than in any other, in the past 100 years. As far as gross things, you just kind of have to get a strong stomach, and you kind of grow into it. You know, I don't want to really speak as to the grossest thing I've seen, but you do kind of have to steel yourself some days.
Do you guys, not you two, of course, but I mean, do they ever like make fun of the dead person? Like, look at that guy or something like that.
You asking me or Todd?
Who wants it?
This is how I feel about it. I will make fun of a living person right to your face, but I would not make fun of a deceased person, because I feel like that is a direct connection to, if you want to say, God or higher power or energy. I just think you're absolutely not.
That's
and, you know, I'll be the first one to make fun of myself, as well as, you know, other people in good humor. But, you know, the whole purpose of our book is about, you know, respect and dignity for the dead and the purpose of a funeral. So I agree 100% with Ken that, you know, there might be people out there that do that, but, you know, it's just not right.
Good for you, too. Hey, we're going to come back. We're going to take final phone calls with you. We're also going to talk about the charity that you both work in. And in what you do in that respect. The book, Mortuary Confidential. This is your chance to talk with Kenneth McKenzie and Todd Hera on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take final calls when we come right back. Next hour, open lines, including a Fright Night hotline. So get ready for that. And when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Kenneth McKenzie and Todd Hera, authors of Mortuary Confidential on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Kenneth McKenzie with us, Todd here. Todd and Ken, I tell you one thing I do like, if you are in a funeral procession, I like the fact that they allow you continuously to go through that that street light or wherever you're going without impeding or stopping, you know, chopping up the procession. And I think that's pretty respectful. Does that occur in every state? I know it happens in Missouri, and I know Michigan does it.
In California, I can tell you that it's, we have to do it because of the traffic. But it's not like smaller towns where, excuse me, that people will slow down and pull over. And I've seen people even salute or put their hand over their heart in some small towns. Here, people use it as an opportunity to get to work faster, join right in.
Let's go to Clarkson, Washington. Randy, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Randy, go ahead.
Good evening, guys. I've got something that happened to me 21 years ago, and it's kind of pre-funeral. But my mother-in-law had come up to visit us. I lived in Anchorage at the time, and she got sick. And she was really bad off, and my wife and I took turns staying in the living room, watching the bedroom, you know, and listening for her. And she got real quiet when it was my turn to watch, and I looked at the bedroom door, and this blue misty cloud drifted over the top of that door. And I ran in there, and she was dead. And I gave her CPR, and of course that didn't work. And when there's a death there, the police, you know, they have to come to the house, and they bring a chaplain with them. And I explained to that chaplain what I saw, and he told me that I saw her spirit leaving her body. You know, and I'm just wondering if anybody else has heard of this or experienced this.
Well, both of them have not seen that, but they do believe in some form or fashion of what happens thereafter. I don't want to put words in both your mouths. Todd, I'll let you take that.
George, I agree with you with what you just said. Randy, I've never seen any sort of visual aspect of it. But like I stated before, I've certainly gotten, you know, these feelings of an energy or presence, and it's not something startling or major. You just kind of feel like maybe there's someone else standing next to you or in the room with you when there isn't. And really, it's not a scary or terrifying thing. And sometimes it can be almost comforting.
When you were both going to school to be a mortician, do they take you back to the ancient times, Egypt, and areas like that, where they had a different understanding or appreciation for death? Do they try to teach you that too?
Oh, yeah. You have to take a class called the History of Funeral Service, and it goes back to it starts in Egyptian times when that's kind of the origin of the modern funeral, if you will, because the Egyptians started, they didn't start embalming, but they started mummification, which is kind of the precursor to embalming.
Somerset, New Jersey, it's Dwayne's turn on Coast to Coast, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I'm calling as a lay person. We were at work the other day, and we were discussing different occupations and professions and things. And I maintain that there was two that I did not, I couldn't figure out why anybody would want to do. One was a funeral director.
What was the other?
The other was a medical examiner. One pumps juices out of a person and pumps them up from formaldehyde. The other one does autopsies all day. And that's the lay person's view.
Sure.
Because we're not in it.
Yeah,
but after this interview, I have to tell you, you guys bring dignity to and knowledge to the field and the profession.
Wow, thank you.
There's, you know, you lost a person, and there's dignity there. I've been pretty lucky. I haven't lost too many people, and thank you.
Thank you.
That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
I hope you buy the book, because what you're talking about is maybe 10% of our job. So buy the book and read about the other 90% of what we do.
Todd, in the book, Mortuary Confidential, what did you like the best about it? What was one of your favorite areas, favorite chapters?
I'd have to say, hands down, my favorite chapter is one called A Hug, A Hope. And it's a poignant story, and it just strikes a chord in me. It's about an apprentice who's standing at a cemetery after all the mourners have left,
And he's watching the vault company, you know, put the vault lid on the casket, lower it into the hole, and a woman standing across the cemetery catches his eye. And he walks over and notices the grave she's looking at. It is a young man about his age. And she asks this guy, you know, I need a hug from my son today. And the point of the story is about, you know, doing great things and small gestures in our everyday life. And I really believe that, you know, we can make such a big difference in so many people's lives every day if we just stop, take a minute, and look for these little opportunities and take advantage of them.
No matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you do. That's true. Lomita, California we go, west of the Rockies. Elka, welcome to Coast, Elka.
Thank you, George. How are you all?
We're well, thank you.
Gentlemen, I was wondering, at the time I was kind of a little bit tense. We were arranging the cremation for my mother-in-law, and the gentleman went out of the room, and it took him quite a while. So I'm wandering around looking at all the books that they have there with all kinds of different pictures, and I come across a book where they show the casket, because that's what we would be doing, picking out a casket. And I saw this big line advertising, guaranteed 25 years, and I just cracked up laughing.
The first time I ever saw that, I was
I'm sorry, I'm laughing now even, but I could not quit laughing. Is it, have you ever?
Yeah.
Did anybody ask and dig them up after 25 years? I mean,
the first time I actually ever read that, it was my first job, and they took me in the casket room, and I go, who wants a warranty? Who cares?
Laughing too, I guess. Huh?
And they go, well, it actually makes sense. And I've had to use it a few times because you're right. Some people are buried. Maybe grandma passes away,
uh-huh,
and they're in California, and then grandpa dies 20 years later. But they've relocated everyone, and everyone now lives in Arizona. So it's not uncommon that we would bring grandma up and ship her to that state so that they would be together. And if the casket's not in a condition that we could put on a plane, the casket company guarantees it and replaces it.
Well, gee, thank you very much. I won't laugh anymore now, I could not have, I was, you know, the tenseness of the situation kind of, I'm sure I had something to do with it because I'm not that callous a person. But so there is a reason for it. Okay, great. Thank you very much. You have a nice day. Evening, morning, whatever.
Okay.
Whatever it is. What's the true difference in terms of why they do it? A crypt versus just burying somebody. What's the crypt for? Is it because they want it to be large and noticeable? Well, why do they do that?
I think that some people want earth burial to go back to the ground, and some people are afraid of burial, so they have that. Some people want to be above ground. Some people are older when their spouse passes and they're in a wheelchair, and it's easier to get to the crypt versus a grave. I think there's a lot of factors.
Does every funeral home have a crematorium there, or is that in a special place somewhere?
Every funeral home could have one. It just depends on the area that your funeral home is built on. And with the new laws and that sort, most of the time you have to be in a commercial industrial area. And most old funeral homes are in residential areas. So a lot of the older places will not have them.
Is that a pretty good business for a company to put in a brand new state-of-the-art crematorium somewhere, maybe in an industrial park in a city, and
Absolutely.
Then market himself to everybody?
Absolutely, because cremation it will be required.
That's not a bad idea. Are you guys going to do that, or should I do it?
Looking for a second career, George?
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Part-time. Michael in Memphis, Tennessee, first-time caller. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Thanks. Great show, George.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, I was the supervisor of interment services for the large cemetery in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
I graduated college back in the 80s.
Ever see anything scary?
Not really eerie. Down in Louisiana, we have what they call reuse. And like in little tombs down there, my family has a two-place tomb, and we've reused it several times.
And how many times can you use it? I guess as often as you want, huh?
Sure. In fact, my great-grandfather bought the tomb originally. We have had over 20 burials in there.
I was going to say, what do you do with the bodies from before? Do they all just pile up in there?
You just pull the casket out, put the remains in the receptacle area.
What you do. So you pull them, pull one out, pull one in.
Dumpster.
Interesting. How much, and thanks for the call, Michael. How much do caskets cost, Kenneth or Todd? How much are they?
I can tell you in California, they're less expensive because there's more people, the more people, the more funeral homes, the more funeral homes, the more competition. So it really has driven the cost down. Caskets can start as simple as a couple hundred dollars and go up into the thousands.
I mean, do people say, hey, just give him a pine box? What the heck?
Some people do.
Honestly, a lot of people come in, and I'm not the best salesperson for myself in that regard because people will come in, and I can tell when they start overspending because of guilt. And a lot of funeral directors don't understand why I do this, but they'll start picking stuff out that's really expensive. And I would stop them and say, what would your dad say if he was here? What would he want you to do? And they would point to the inexpensive one. I said, well, then why don't you do that? Because honestly, then, at least you treat people fairly, and then they go out and tell other people. But honestly, if the person was with you, you got to be their voice at that point because they can't.
It's really for the living, isn't it? The expensive
Absolutely.
Casket.
I mean, oh, yes.
The old dead guy, he doesn't care.
I know.
That is something. That's pretty dramatic indeed. Now, what about somebody, let's get back to the indigent person again. Who pays for that? The county?
The county or the state or the persons. If you pass away in California and you do have monies and you don't have family and you didn't have a will, your money goes to the state of California. The state then will allow how you led your life and how much money you had. They can tell that by looking at your records, what type of funeral you probably would have purchased for yourself. And then that's when that funeral home goes on rotation, and that funeral home has to provide that service, and then the state gives you that person's monies to take care of them.
You mean there's a person in California whose job is to tell the funeral home, this person lived this way, give them this kind of funeral. We've
yeah,
already got the
public
money.
Administrator.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, how do you pay for a funeral? Can you charge it? Do you guys finance it? How does somebody pay for it?
You can finance it if you're paying before it happens. And in California, then it's due at the time of death. Or a lot of people honestly use credit cards, whatever they need to do. And today's day and age and the times that we're going through, people as families pull together, and some people bring in cash, checks, people donate, whatever it takes.
Are there banks that finance funerals?
I've heard of a few, but by the time that they fill out all the forms and everything, this is something you got to do quickly. I've never really seen anyone do that often.
Let's go to Jackson.
And life insurance is a big payment.
That's true. And I mean, how fast does a life insurance policy generally pay? A guy dies on a Monday. Is it going to have is the family going to have the check by Friday?
We do something called an insurance assignment, and that means I verify with the company, the insurance company that is, that there is insurance, it wasn't borrowed against, and it is in force, and that they will pay the funeral home directly. And then I just continue with the service with the family. They don't pay anything up front.
Okay, that's smart. Okay.
And then they just pay us. It takes them 6 to 8 weeks to pay it.
If the guy's got a $100,000 policy and the funeral is 10 grand and it's unencumbered, they'll sign over that portion, and the insurance company then cuts you that check.
Exactly, and the rest goes to the family as it should.
You know what? That's pretty good. And then they have to wait. I mean, it might take you 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Who knows?
But that's what we do. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. I'm learning a lot here tonight. East of the Rockies, Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show. Fascinating subject. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in rural Jamaica. And I thought you'd all be kind of interested in some of the funerary practices that they practice out there. You had mentioned earlier that the funeral is a celebration of life, and that's definitely how it is in Jamaican society. Funerals go on for a little over a week, about 9 days, 9 nights. It's rooted in a lot of West African traditions. And pretty much from the time the person becomes deceased, friends and family and pretty much the whole town goes to the deceased house, where the family provides, you know, rum, and they sit around and they catch up and they talk about the deceased and they pay honor to his memory. And around Thursday, you go out and have the grave digging. Most of the town goes out to the cemetery and they dig a grave, and it's usually a cement block kind of vault. And then Friday is the setup, this fabulous all-night party that can just attract hundreds of people. The more people that come to this thing, the more honor you show to the dead person. And people party all night, and then Saturday morning, you go and you have the funeral. And these can be very elaborate. I rented a little house where I had actually six people buried in the backyard, because that's another popular thing to do in the country. You bury your family members on your property. It shows them respect. It solidifies the family, and it guarantees your ownership of the land, because nobody else wants it. No, it's a great way to secure your property. Nobody wants to rent it either. And because I was kind of a foreigner,
neutral. Good point.
I was, there's a lot of belief in spirits. They have the Duffy, which is, it's a ghost. It's not all that malevolent, but it's something you don't want to deal with. And the whole purpose of the elaborate funeral and showing respect is to guide the Duffy into the afterlife. If the Duffy is wronged, or if it sticks around, it can cause mischief and, just bad energy for people. So
they're
very wary to rent these houses.
That's interesting, Chris. Also, in other cultures, like the Middle Eastern culture, they have the jinn, which is something like that as well. Kenneth and Todd, we're running out of time. You have a charity called Cam Cares, and you donate a portion, you, Kenneth, of your professional services to this to the charity of the Family's Choice as well. Good for both of you. The book, of course, is Mortuary Confidential. Your website we've got linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Ken and Todd, thanks for the program. Very informative.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, George.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate that. I'll be back in a moment now with open lines, including the Fright Night Hotline. We'll be back.